The following is a production of BYU Broadcasting in cooperation with the Brigham Young University Division of Continuing Education.
Footprints are impressions. When we stumble upon these impressions, we think, quite naturally, of the people who made them. But the word footprint is also a metaphor. Sometimes the impression is not a literal indentation in sand or soil, but something very different. I'm Marcus Smith, inviting you to take some time with me to look at a kind of print left not so much in the soil as with the soil, clinging to even the smallest particles. We're going to Maya territory, where we'll discuss faint traces of phosphorus that have survived the centuries. These chemical footprints, these hints or traces, have resulted in a fascinating new finding for the archaeologists who first detected them. It's all about an ancient Maya marketplace on today's Thinking Aloud. And we will be talking archaeology today a little bit. That's not to say necessarily that our guest is an archaeologist. He's an environmental scientist, Richard Terry, environmental scientist at Brigham Young University, has produced numerous publications drawing on his expertise of soil chemical analysis, including a recent publication that will be at the focus of today's conversation. That publication, the article title is In Search of an Ancient Maya Market. It was published in the Journal of the Society for American Archaeology, which is titled Latin American Antiquity. Richard Terry received a PhD in soil biochemistry from Purdue University. His current research emphasizes soil microbiology and biochemistry, biogeochemical cycles, and soil chemistry, as well as isotopes in ancient human activities. I'm going to try to give you a few names of the places he's been as of late in his research. He and his team have worked at ancient Maya cities of Piedras Negras, Tikal, Ceibal, Aguateca, and Motul in Guatemala. They've also investigated ancient Maya activity areas in the ancient cities of... Hang on for the ride to see. Chunchakmil. Did I get that
right?
That's right. Mayapan and Xtobo in the Yucatan Peninsula of Mexico. Richard Terry, pleasure to have you.
Marcus, thank you for inviting me.
You know, I knew that this would kind of hover around archaeology to some degree, and I'll let you in just a moment explain your field of expertise, but I always think of Harrison Ford, and I expect a little sweat dripping off your chin knowing you'd been down in those regions, but you come in looking real proper and like a professor to me.
Well, when we go down there, you carry a camelback on your back, and you suck the water in, and it pours out your forehead. And that's just what it is.
And what about mosquitoes? I just can't imagine.
Last time we were down there at Ceibal, we burned palm nuts. We burned them to make smoke. Uh-huh. And so we tried to stay in the smoke all the time to keep the mosquitoes away. The mosquitoes were so horrible.
Do you have any sense, have you even counted, are there notches in your gun for how many times you've been down exploring?
I would estimate a dozen, about a dozen times that I've been to Central America, Mexico, investigating these sites, visiting conferences and things of that sort.
A couple questions for you right off the bat. Would you give us a sense of your discipline and the kinds of tools, scholarly tools, you bring to bear on the topic today? And then I'm interested in knowing if you had any idea how big of a splash this particular story would make in the among archaeologists who study the Maya.
In my area of soil chemistry, we're interested in what happens to nitrogen and carbon and phosphorus and other substances in the soil. Our work in archaeology brings us to soil phosphorus, but also to metallic substances such as iron and lead and manganese and so forth. But the thing is that these chemicals, phosphorus especially, when those chemicals get into the soil, they remain there fixed on soil surfaces. All vegetable matter contains phosphorus. So we're interested in soil phosphorus regarding ancient human activities because we'd like to know where people had their kitchens, where their waste was deposited, where their garden plots were located. these kinds of things. And as it turns out, they're marketplace activities. I never thought that I would be involved in marketplace activities and looking for ancient Maya marketplaces. But things kind of came together with working with the right archaeologist and also with my undergraduate students who have been quite innovative and are always thinking outside the box a little bit. Anyway, this project came together.
How big has the team been for this? You say some students involved, but also researchers from other institutions?
I counted up the other day. I have 26 collaborators at 15 different universities who I've worked with at various Maya sites. We work with various archaeologists who have interest in ancient human activities and the chemical signatures of those activities. I got involved in this project some time back when Stephen Houston, he used to be a faculty member here. He's now at Brown University. He started the Piedras Negras project. And those archaeologists and geographers on the project wanted to look for ancient middens and places of archaeological interest. And soil phosphorus is one way to find those places quickly in the dense rainforest.
Let's back up just a bit. I still don't want to get quite into the real nitty-gritty because, frankly, the nitty-gritty kind of scares me. I'm no scientist. But I'm curious, how did you get so interested in dirt? I mean, what was it about dirt and the chemistry of dirt that even led you into a career like this?
It's always fascinated me that plants would grow. As a kid, I always loved working in the garden and so forth. And I visited a faculty member here at BYU when I was a freshman. I started out as a math major and soon learned that that isn't what I wanted to do. And I visited with Ray Farnsworth, and he started telling me about how plant nutrients are held in the soil. And I thought, well, how fascinating that is. And he convinced me that I should take a soils class, and that's where it started.
And this particular area of research dealing with the ancient Maya marketplaces or plays, this is just one area in which you've applied your science. This is kind of forensic work. Is forensic a good term to be using to describe broadly the kinds of investigations you conduct?
Yes, it is. I might indicate that most of my research over my career has been dealing with environmental issues, water quality issues, pollution that might result from agricultural processes and things going on in the soil. But in this case, we're interested in ancient activities, and the problem is in archaeology is you don't always find the artifact that is going to tell you what happened. People pick artifacts up. If you've ever seen an abandoned house, over the years, things disappear from the house. People go in and take what they want, and that's happened in ancient times, too. The thing is that people normally don't pick up the soil and leave with it. So the soil stays put, and the chemical imprints of those activities are still there.
And still, one more generality. There's a lot of scuttlebutt in the news these days about pharmaceutical pollution. It sounds to me like that's going to be a topic of interest to you as well. Are you tracing mostly the soil or traces of chemicals that flush out of the soil into the water?
Things that flush out of the soil into the water aren't going to stick around for us to look at archaeologically. So we're looking for things that stick around. The pharmaceutical problem is an interesting one. You know, the advice has been if you're through with your prescription and have extra pills, flush it down the toilet. Well, we've known for a long time that was a bad practice, and finally people have caught on to it.
Yeah, this term that you follow biogeochemical cycles, that doesn't exactly fold in hydrology as a major focus of yours then.
In that the water is one of those systems that carries the chemicals away from the soil, yes. When we talk about biogeochemical, we're talking about cycles such as the phosphorus cycle or the nitrogen cycle or the carbon cycle that go on the micro scale in the soil, but also on the broader earth scale.
Well, let's finally, I've put it off, let's get to the nitty-gritty, and let's talk about, from the gist of things that I've been able to detect with my forensics, it seems that your team has come up with a hypothesis to pursue, and the hypothesis is that traces of phosphorus in the soil, whether it be residue or something that clings to particles, these traces indicate the presence of marketplaces that were open public spaces, perhaps free trading, a lot of negotiating, and previous theories about the way the economy of the Maya people have worked hinged on the idea of a centralized economy with a centralized distribution of goods and foods and that sort of thing. Is that right?
Yes. I have gotten into a lot of things here that I never thought I would be studying, capitalism versus Marxism, and all of a sudden we start getting into these arguments over how things were actually done in ancient times. Let's think for a minute about a market. If you've ever been to a market in Latin America, they have market day activities, and people bring their tables and awnings and chairs and then all of the goods, and they set things up. Things are bought and sold for a few hours, and then at the end of the day, all of the goods are taken away, the tables, the chairs, the awnings, everything is removed. And so at the end of the day, you would have no indication that a market ever took place there.
Except for the footprints.
Right. And this is the same thing. If you've been to a local flea market here in the U.S., it's the same thing. I mean, it's a flea market one day, and it's a parking lot the next. And that's, we think, what happened in ancient times as well. It's certainly what's happening today in Latin America. And so we don't know how long that tradition went back into antiquity. What we're finding now is various lines of evidence to point towards marketplace activities. It's one of those things where you don't have the artifact sitting there that's telling you or yelling marketplace activities. So that's why we're looking at the soil chemistry, which can give us some indications.
Well, are there more smoking guns? You focus on the chemical phosphorus evidence, right?
Yes, other evidences are trade products. If you look at a city and you find products that were brought in hundreds of miles away, that's an indication of trade that has gone on. If you find causeways or pathways where people had access to certain areas of the city. The reason we came to this idea of a marketplace at Chunchuk Mill is right in the center of this huge Maya city, you have an open park or an open lot. It's just a big plaza with nothing in it. The archaeologist looked for artifacts, didn't find much. There was the occasional sherd.
Is this a city that's been vacated, or is it currently occupied? People living there today?
There's a tiny village outside of the ancient city. The ancient city probably housed maybe 50,000 people. It was one of the largest Maya cities in Central America. But today, no one's living in the city proper. One reason the archaeologist, Bruce Dallin, was living there is that the ruins look terrible. It's one of these places that no tourist would ever want to go. So he thought that the Institute for Archaeology in Mexico would probably leave him alone, just let him do his archaeology, wouldn't have to bother with them. Well, unfortunate for him, or fortunate for us, he started finding interesting things that shouldn't be there. You know, we think of elite items, things that a wealthy person would have, or things that the king might have in his house. Well, one of the first things they found at Chunchuk Mill were carved pots, jade, and other high-price, high-value items in the homes of commoners. And they shouldn't have been there. And that led to, that's the beginning of our thinking of maybe there was a market economy among the ancient Maya.
Now give us a sense for how radically this changes conventional wisdom about the economies. I'm led to believe that heretofore, most historians or archaeologists dealing with the Maya people have not posited this kind of free, open exchange at markets. It was controlled, distribution centralized through a powerful hierarchy where the leaders at top decided who got what.
Yes, the thinking has been that the king or the elites of an individual city, such as Tikal or Sebal or Chunchuk Mill, that these leaders brought obsidian, jade, and other high-value, high-price items into the city, and then they distributed that out. Everyone that lived in an ancient Maya city had to have obsidian. That was their knife blade. And, in fact, you have to be careful today digging in the soil. The old knife blades are still there, and they're still extremely sharp. You have to be careful you don't cut yourself on them.
Now we're getting into Harrison Ford territory.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And so everyone had to have these high-value items. Obsidian in Central America, that came from literally hundreds of miles away, perhaps the Valley of Mexico, perhaps the highlands of Guatemala. So someone brought those items in from long distance. They're very expensive. And the thinking was that the king controlled this trade, and so people would bring their tax or their tribute to the king, and he in exchange would give them these high-value necessary items.
Have you debunked that, or are you just lending a new hypothesis to the
situation? Well, it's a new hypothesis that we have. The question is this something that we find universal across the Maya world, or is it just an unusual thing that we find at Chinchuk Mill?
Hard to say at this point, probably, until you've unearthed other marketplaces. And let's talk again about just the actual detection of phosphorus in the soil. How does the phosphorus, you say, comes from vegetative matter? And so, is it materials that have been trodden upon, spilled in the market?
That's right. In fact, as part of this study, we found a modern Maya marketplace at Antigua, Guatemala. And beautiful place. It's an open plaza. We went there the day before market, and it was just an open field. But the day of marketing, people are there in their native dress, very colorful, vegetable matter of all sorts being sold, potatoes and lettuce and every type of vegetable you can imagine. And the marketplace was full of people. The vendors were lined up in rows. There were pathways in between the rows so that the customers could come in and look at the products. And we could see that there were leaves of the vegetable that were being trodden upon and worked into the soil. If this happened in ancient times, we would expect to find that imprint of the phosphorus from that vegetable matter trodden into the soils of the marketplace. Looking at Chinchuk Mill, we found this open plaza. And there was a causeway that came in from one side of the plaza, the main entrance to the plaza, we think.
You say causeway, I usually think in terms of a water course, but you're talking about a footpath or a...
Yeah, this was a footpath. However, it was the width of a two-lane highway. And it was built up, and in ancient times, it would have been beautifully stuccoed. So it would have been a beautiful white stuccoed pathway. We think it was ceremonial because you don't need that wide of a pathway for a footpath, but that's what they had. And so they must have had processionals and all sorts of ritual activities going on these causeways because they were very expensive to build. But where this causeway came into this open plaza, we found in the soil of the plaza rock alignments. These rock alignments, they were one stone high, and we found them all over the place. But they were kind of in a pattern across the plaza parallel to the entrance of this causeway. When we did our soil sampling, we set up a grid. We take samples every so many meters. In the case of this plaza, every 10 meters we took a sample of soil. And what we found then was higher levels of phosphorus where these rock alignments were. So if you were to trace the path of the causeway coming in and then trace the path of the phosphorus in the plaza, it's parallel to that pathway. So what we're seeing here is a pathway into this open field and places where vendors could have sold their vegetable products, leaving this imprint in the soil.
So you say parallel to and adjacent, proximate to the...
The reason is that where people walk in, what we find is that pathways tend to be clean, in other words, free of phosphorus. The soil, foot traffic and so forth, tends to work the soil to the side. So if you followed the causeway directly into this field, the phosphate pattern is low, but right next to it, parallel to it, is this pattern of phosphorus parallel to that entranceway into the marketplace.
You're listening to Thinking Aloud. I'm Marcus Smith, and today we're chatting with Professor Richard Terry at Brigham Young University, an environmental scientist who's been involved in a team that has discovered traces that lead to a new hypothesis about the economy of the ancient Maya, a marketplace having been found. And I'm interested in this comparative analysis. Are there other comparative similarities that you've determined between the present-day marketplace in Antigua and Guatemala and the ancient marketplace?
Yes. In the modern marketplace, my undergraduate student, David Wright, accompanied me. He was a former missionary in Guatemala. And so he was familiar with the Maya, and he sat down and interviewed a number of these vendors who were selling vegetables at the marketplace. And they indicated, oh, I've sold my vegetables on this spot for the last 15 years. In other words, this is what I and my family have been assigned, and we come back here repeatedly to this exact same spot. So there's a tradition. Does it extend into antiquity? Maybe so. The other thing is that we find borders around the modern marketplace. It can be closed off. We find rock alignments at the Chunchuk Mill at the ancient plaza where it could have been blocked off. So there are a number of similarities. Access. Where's the marketplace located? It's located where the people are, where the people congregate, where they gather together.
And that's no surprises there. When you think about any marketplace historically, it has to be central to where the populace is.
That's right. And another thing that's curious is that right next to this market plaza, what we're calling now a market plaza at Chunchuk Mill, is the ball court. The ball court is where ancient ceremonies are held, and basically the Maya creation story is told in association with the sacred ball game. And so now we're wondering, when people came to market, did they also come to do their rituals? If they're coming from miles outside of the city, bringing their products with them to sell, wouldn't they stay and do their rituals at the same time?
You know, there's multiple overlays of different disciplines that are brought to bear on a topic like this, and you come as the one studying the chemistry of the soil. You work with others on the team who are archaeologists, perhaps even historians. There's social, cultural history in all of this. Have you come up against limits to your hypothesis? Have you come up, where are the points of caution that you give yourself as you do this investigation, and you say, well, we can only take this so far?
There are, as with any hypothesis, there could be other explanations that people could come up with. And I think people are coming around to our thinking of marketplaces because there are so many other parallel indications. I indicate multiple lines of evidence. One at Chunchuk Mill is the elite items that in the homes of commoners. They shouldn't have been there. Maybe those commoners were a middle class of merchants. That would be
a whole new thing to chew on.
Right. The other thing is the location of Chunchuk Mill. It's halfway between the Gulf Coast of Mexico, the Gulf of Mexico coast on Yucatan, and the Pook Hills. The Pook Hills are where the major concentration of ancient Maya live because of their wonderful soils and agricultural productivity. My students have also been looking at the agricultural productivity around Chunchuk Mill, and we can't find it. They have wonderful soils, but not much of it. A deep soil profile around Chunchuk Mill might be 6 inches, sitting on top of bedrock. And we don't think that a city of 50,000 could have sustained itself with those soils. That's another indication of trade. There must have been some way of bringing food into that huge city, and there must have been something to exchange for it.
So if your hypothesis or hypotheses are changing the basic lay of the land as it's been viewed by archaeologists in relation to the Maya people and their civilization and their economy, you're coming up with a picture that kind of resembles a mercantile society where a lot of goods are being transferred long distances and perhaps with less control from a hierarchy than previously supposed. Is that
So yes, that's the basic heresy. certainly among the social scientists and archaeologists, I've had archaeologists tell me, oh, Richard, it can't be. Tell me it isn't so. And, well, I say, well, look at my data, and but those people are coming around.
Well, you know, if you read the New York Times article on this, if you read the National Geographic magazine article on this, you know, those are organizations that they do their backgrounding very carefully, and they're not going to go out on a limb and say, hey, here's something that you should afford some credibility to give this a fair shake. Are you being given a fair shake by your colleagues across the?
We are, and there's a couple of things in the mill. There are some other sites, now that we've shown this potential marketplace at Chinchuk Mill, now people are looking, oh, well, there ought to be one there, and there ought to be one over here. People have suggested market activities among the ancient Maya for years. Some archaeologists have suggested this, but they've never had the data. They've never been able to demonstrate to other archaeologists that this was actually the case. So, anyway, with our multiple lines of evidence, we feel better about making that assertion that indeed the Maya had a merchant class of people, and that the Maya had a market economy.
Just got about a minute left. I want to talk just very broadly about scientific method, the way you approach this sort of a thing. I'm always interested in the cart versus the horse. You know, what's pulling what? Did the hypothesis emerge out of your findings, or did you stipulate up front, we think that we should look for something that might resemble our hypothesis?
The archaeologist I was working with, Bruce Dallin is his name, he had the hypothesis to start with. He was looking for a way to find the multiple lines of evidence. He had several of them already. But the soil chemistry certainly helped us find the smoking gun.
So and how important is the soil chemistry as corroborative evidence with the other lines of evidence?
It's very important. I might also mention that as far as our testing and so forth, we look at multiple types of plazas. We look at different plazas. In other words, if Richard Terry is finding a marketplace everywhere he looks, then it may not mean anything. But we look at other plazas, and we don't find the same patterns. We find different patterns in other types of plazas.
You going to go out and have some more fun on this topic?
Oh, absolutely.
What you got lined up next?
Oh, there's about 15 different cities that we'd like to go visit and sample their marketplaces.
We'll line up the coconut shells or whatever it is you burned for your mosquitoes. And
that's
I wish
right.
You good luck.
Thank you.
Richard Terry, a great pleasure to have you on Thinking Aloud today. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Richard Terry, an environmental scientist at Brigham Young University, been at BYU since about 1980, and very involved in a team of researchers studying soil chemistry at ancient sites in Maya country. We hope you listen to Thinking Aloud every chance you get. We remind you that we do broadcast our interviews at 11 o'clock on weekdays, in the same evenings at 8 o'clock, with the exception of Tuesdays when we bring you a BYU Forum or devotional broadcast. Our production team includes the following individuals: Wes Sims and Koyo Iyamba, BYU students Rob Sanders, Anna Staker, and Brent Rowland. Our theme music is by BYU graduate student Nicholas Greer. Thinking Aloud comes to you from the studios of BYU Broadcasting. We are located in the Harris Fine Arts Center on the BYU campus. I'm Marcus Smith, and this has been Thinking Aloud.
Thinking Aloud is a production of BYU Broadcasting, made possible in cooperation with the Brigham Young University Division of Continuing Education.